Hello, cinephiles, and welcome to Indie Outlook, the show that sheds light on must-see cinema from the Windy City and around the globe. I'm your host, Matt Fagerholm of HollywoodChicago.com. Today I'm joined by Matt Sheehan of HollywoodSnitch.com. Welcome to the program, Matt.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And, you know, seeing that the summer movie season has arrived, we are here to discuss our most anticipated titles of the next 3 months. But I'm always on the lookout for titles that could easily get lost in the shuffle. You get so many films coming out in one period of time. And film buffs in Chicago have the great advantage of choosing between mainstream multiplexes and art house venues the likes of Facets, Gene Siskel Film Center, Music Box Theater, Landmark Century Center Cinema. There's just so many to choose from. So in this special episode of Indie Outlook, we'll be offering a comprehensive look at the most promising films, both big and small, to see this summer. And, you know, in a way, summer movie season has already begun in a big way with the Avengers.
Yes, it certainly, I think, blew the socks off of a lot of people. I think general film goers in general, myself included, because I was a little bit skeptical with Marvel sort of oversaturating the market with so many of these movies. So I kind of had this feeling that, I was a little skeptical. Will it bomb? Will it be successful? Will it be, and most importantly, will it be good? And I think it certainly was beyond my expectations, because Whedon took all these characters that were in good to, shall we say, subpar or frankly not good films, and took all these characters and said, and honed them down and knew exactly how to put them together and not have that sense of too much of a good thing.
Yeah, I thought that was the best thing about The Avengers when I saw it. I didn't think it was the best film of all time, but I thought it was obviously the best one since the first Iron Man, at least. That that was my opinion. And I think that the real secret to its success is that they had Joss Whedon as the director. I thought that was one of the main reasons, because he has this whole thing in his career about subverting genres. It's like he'll work within a genre and then kind of deconstruct it. And it took me forever to look at, you know, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It just looked like something I wouldn't be interested in. Kind of like the Avengers. I was like, I don't need to see another superhero movie. Why don't you see that? But he has such a great wit that he brings to his projects. And I think it takes a little while, maybe like the first 20 minutes of Avengers, to really get into the character dynamics. But it really just pays off in spades, because he allows every character to have their own moment to shine. And really kind of gets underneath their persona. I mean, it's like the last thing you'd expect to see in Avengers is all the Avengers in a restaurant eating, like, you know, shawarma or whatever it is.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Whatever that food is.
Well, I just saw it for that scene wasn't shown to us in the press, unfortunately. Marvel, if you're listening, please add it in the next one.
It's at the very, 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 very end.
You got the first button sort of right about like a minute or two into the credits, and then you got the one at the end. I just saw it again the other day, second time I took my fiance to go see it. And second time I went in sort of just as sitting back and enjoying. And just in that regard, it is just pure entertainment. It's just wonderful. And the best thing about it, too, is that it's so evenly paced despite all these characters in there. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, what, I think 2 hours and 20-something minutes long.
Yeah, 2 hours, 20 minutes, and it flies by even faster than Avatar, even though I thought Avatar flew by. I wasn't a fan of Avatar, but I could at least say that, you know, Cameron's a great editor. He really knows how to, you know, pace it along. But Avengers really was. It was effortless. It was pure entertainment, as you say. And I think that Joss Whedon has that. He's kind of an oddball when you want to pick him for a tentpole movie. And what I thought was interesting was you also have Mark Webb, who did 500 Days of Summer. I think that was his feature debut. And it was a modest, you know, box office success. But I think people could really see, you know, he was the real deal. He was an interesting, fresh voice, you know, kind of deconstructing the romantic comedy genre a little bit, you know, some, you know, unconventional feel-good movie, you know, for you know, the reasons of it's not exactly a feel-good relationship. And then you have Christopher Nolan doing the, you know, the Batman films. And obviously he's a brand now. I mean they rest easy at night giving him, you know, the reins of this project. But it must have been, you know, back with Batman Begins, somewhat of a gamble. It's like, you know, where's this guy going to take us? You know, it's...
Well, yeah, you've got, you know, he started obviously with the indie filmmaking from Following through Memento to, you know, then he got the little bit of extra money and a lot of, and some more name actors, mainstream, in Insomnia. And then he got picked to do Batman Begins. And then you start sitting there thinking, you know, is this right? Because and then he hires Christian Bale and you're thinking, really? You got the kid from Newsies you're going to hire to put him on? you know,
American Psycho. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's like, is he going to be running, you know, be covered in blood with the chainsaw and then all of a sudden breaking a song and a dance about newspapers or something? You know, you don't necessarily know what's going to happen, but I think because of that indie background and being able to establish himself as unique, create something that does have some sort of mainstream appeal and is very, in a way, has the sense of originality. Mm-hmm. You know, Memento, I think, is just, I don't think it's a fantastic film. It is a very, very good film. But because of its unique way of narrative structure, I recommend it. Just because of that, you know, kind of like starting at the end of, or start at the beginning of chapter 20 to the end of chapter 20, then jump to the beginning of 19 to the end of 20, and just...
It's flipping back and forth in time. It's like, here's what happened at the beginning, and here's what happened at the end, and then it eventually joins in the middle. And it's very disorienting the first time, and the reason why it is so much fun on multiple viewings is you keep seeing more and more. It is the gift that keeps on giving in many ways. Yes. If you can just approach it as a structural experiment and just kind of allow yourself to just get into that experience, it's quite impressive.
And he's also good at assembling good casts. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at, like, for example, okay, we'll start with Memento. You got Guy Pearce, and Guy Pearce is great. You got, I don't know how to pronounce his last name properly, but I just call him Joey Pants. Mm-hmm. Joey Pantoliano, yeah. I think, yeah. is how you yeah. pronounce it. I just call him that.
It's good enough, yeah.
Carrie Ann Moss, and even Stephen Tobolowsky is in it, and even Thomas Leonard from Reno 911 has a character in there, and it's really, he's good at assembling all these, and then you go into Insomnia, all those people, Pacino and Hilary Swank, and now you've got people that...
And then Robin Williams playing against type. Yeah.
Yeah, very much against type, and I think that was something that... it was dark, and I think that was something that if he really tackled something that dark like that, I would love to have seen Robert Williams in some sort of Batman role, some sort of character in that universe in one of Nolan's movies. And I know there was discussion of him with Joker, and then maybe I think there was rumor that him maybe with the Riddler batting around, but
sure.
First off, you know, you can't see anybody past Heath Ledger in The Dark Knight is Joker. You can't. It's impossible. It's a tough act to follow, too. So this is sort of...
Yeah, and Heath Ledger was someone who really... He was hungry to take chances with his career. He was always wanting... That's why he loved working with Terry Gilliam. He mm-hmm. could see when someone wasn't just kind of like a commercial hack, you know, someone who actually had some kind of artistic integrity. And where he took that role, I mean, some people are like, oh, well, the role killed him. And of course, that's not true. I mean, it was long past that rumor. But I mean, he really did get so deep into that darkness, that just kind of animalistic ferocity of just, you know, consuming your enemy at all costs, and then just dragging down Batman with that. And then Nolan brilliantly trying to reflect, you know, modern society, but not too much. I mean, he allows you to read into it. So it's like you can kind of see some kind of metaphor for terrorism, and then are we supposed to lower ourselves to the level of the terrorists to beat them, you know?
And I think what's so complex with Nolan's work, too, is the trend of dual identities in all of his movies, you know, from Following and everything, where you could be one person one minute, and then you also have this either alter ego or you just become a completely different person, this Jekyll Hyde type personality. Mm-hmm. We see so much of that in all of his works. And I think with, especially with Dark Knight, it was, you could see, you know, obviously Bruce Wayne, Batman, but then you could also see Batman, Joker as two mm-hmm. alternate identities. And then, of course, you had the Two-Face thing, you know, where that was pretty much a literal two different people.
Yeah.
So to see that trend continue through his movies, and obviously with him introducing Catwoman in this upcoming one, mm-hmm. I think will end up being pretty unique. And I'm curious to see where he goes with Bane, because, you know, the one thing that, you know, non-comic book fans, you know, just general movie-going audiences know of is the crap one that they did in Batman and Robin.
Yeah.
And
I will admit, as a kid going, again, that pure entertainment experience that you sometimes seek out, I was very satisfied with Batman Forever.
Me
the,
too.
The first Schumacher film. I thought that was terrific. But even as a kid, going into Batman and Robin, there was just something about, the whole production was off. You could just tell the whole production was off. And when it got to Bane, I even remember just being so annoyed with Bane. I was like, well, he's just the big... schlub. He's just kind of there, just mumbling his line. I think he just had like one line he said. I don't know what it was such, there's nothing interesting about that. Even on a comic level, there's nothing interesting about
in terms
that.
Of, I mean, I have a friend who is a big comic book fan, and he told me he was very, you know, Bane is a very important character in the comics. You know, he's the one that, in case people aren't aware, he's the one that took Batman and cracked him over his knee and broke it and turned him into a paraplegic. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that's going to be the way that they're going to do, because there's little clues that we're seeing in the trailer. Bruce Wayne walking with a cane. He's very broken and battered and, you know, bruised with everything, both physically and emotionally. Wondering what they're going to do. I don't know if maybe they'll do the whole breaking of the back thing. It's possible. There's a lot of characters that we don't know a lot about anyways. The Joseph Gordon-Levitt, we don't know really who, you know, he's just a cop in the movie.
Yeah, he's like an officer or something. Yeah. And Marion Cotillard, you know, we're not sure who she is.
Yeah, her, you know, Matthew Modine's character as well, we're not too sure, because, you know, we just don't know where he's going to be going. And he's, like I said, Nolan's really good at taking something, you know, that is already established and really putting his own little spin and making it his own and something completely wholly original.
Absolutely. And the thing about The Dark Knight Rises as well is that you see all of these, you know, previews that are hinting at the possibility of there'll be some kind of reflection of like Occupy Wall Street or something like that. And with Catwoman's line where it's like, you know, you won't believe that you could have ever lived so large and leave so little for the rest of us, and very, very pointed dialogue. And I love that he just kind of goes for that. It's like he doesn't avoid it. He doesn't avoid, you know, subject matter that might be somewhat polarizing or be provocative. He really goes there. And I find that so much more, it is just more interesting, I guess, intellectually as a moviegoer. It's like you're going for the pure entertainment experience, and it does function as that. But there's so much more to latch onto and observe in his work. And what artistic integrity to say, this is my last Batman movie. It's like, I don't need to take endless paychecks. I don't need to keep making this franchise go on and on. Of course, the studio will. The studio will find someone else to have it go on. But it's great to see someone who has that integrity to say, no, this is my last, then I'm going to do something else. Unlike Lucas, who just keeps, you know, saying it and not
Lucas,
doing it.
Lucas, you know, my favorite movie is the entire Star Wars trilogy, or saga, shall we say, because I view that as one gigantic thing. Don't blasphemize Lucas ever.
Except for
Howard the Duck, I'll give you that
one. Oh, sure. I think it's interesting that he is always seen as like the enemy of, you know, independent cinema, of cinema as an art form, of, you know, interesting intellectual cinema becoming popularized, because he really was an independent filmmaker at heart. I mean, he built Star Wars from the ground up, and I feel like he is a testament to the success of what an independent filmmaker can be, but then also being consumed by
overindulgence in a way.
Overindulgence, and then just kind of that commercial calculation that, you know, that can happen, you know.
Well, you know, times are bad when they start, you know, the economy's really bad when George Lucas starts making cuts at Lucasfilm. And I remember seeing on Twitter, like, I forget who it was some celebrity, was a big geek herself. She ended up unfollowed Star Wars just because one of her longtime friends who was high up in Lucasfilm got laid off.
Oh.
And you know times are tough when George Lucas says, I gotta pinch a little bit more out of this $100 bill. You're fired, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because he always says he wants to go back just to his little movies. He's had enough success with Star Wars, but it just always, you know. And the younger generations love it. I mean, I can be the old fogey and say it's not what it used to be, and it isn't. But, you know, the kids are still, I still see 7-year-olds wearing, you know, Darth Vader shirts. And
yeah, oh, I love, and so do I, trust me.
But the interesting thing now is that when you have a summer film, or just any really big, you know, mainstream film in general, you know, the product has to come before, you know, the movie now. It used to be the movie comes out, then you have the products attached, and then you start your own line. But now you actually have to seek out the Hasbro
marketing,
product
and
attach the $200 million price tag to the budget.
Your 7-Ups, your Cokes, your Pepsis, your McDonald's, your Happy Meals.
Absolutely. Well, because I think Dark Knight Rises will be the big movie of the summer. We'll see if it's as big as The Avengers, which has done phenomenal business both overseas
certainly,
and here. But
certainly raised the bar, too. Certainly raised the bar.
It raises the
quality
bar.
Quality and, I think, box office wise.
Yeah, quality, exactly. So in June, what we're getting into is, at least for me, from the independent perspective, there are a number of actors who are having some of their big, you know, breakouts, like would-be breakouts. We have Greta Gerwig, who did a lot of Chicago indies. She did a lot of stuff with Joe Swanberg. Hannah Takes the Stairs and Nights and Weekends are two notable titles. And this year we're getting the Greta Gerwig triple bill, which I think might partly be due to her success with Greenberg, the Noah Baumbach film with Ben Stiller. So this year she was already in a movie called Damsels in Distress, which was the Whit Stillman film. Now she's in the new Woody Allen film, To Rome with Love, which is coming out in, I think, June. I think it's June. And then Lola Versus, which is going to be her big like star vehicle. And it's from the producers of 500 Days of Summer. And she plays a girl who's in her late 20s having some kind of life crisis. And in some ways, it reminds me of Girls, the HBO show by Lena Dunham, who was actually one of Greta Gerwig's, you know, former roommates. And it seems like there is like a crop now of, you know, female-centric films, you know, from, you know, the female voices, you know, at least, you know, writer-directors.
Strong female voices, too.
Exactly.
And I see that a lot with, like, literature, too. Like, you've got The Hunger Games and Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, and that's translated very well into film with having them as strong female characters. And, yeah, I agree. There's a lot of good female-centric films that do portray them, not just as that, ironically enough, damsel in distress.
Exactly.
You know, no pun intended, but it plays well to see something like that represented well. And I think part of that might even be to last summer to see the success of Bridesmaids, to see something that women can hold up well and be appealing to both men and women.
Exactly. And just one little more thing on that note was Lynn Shelton, who's also a great independent filmmaker. She had great success with Hump Day in past years, which was with Mark Duplass.
I've been meaning to see that, and I've heard so many different things about that.
It's really, really funny. And she's reteaming with her star, Mark Duplass, which most people, he's really gotten up a lot of you know, just exposure on The League. You know, people seem to be most familiar with him on The League, but he's done great films himself with his brother Jay. The Puffy Chair was their first big hit.
Didn't he do Cyrus?
He did Cyrus. Yep.
Cyrus was very interesting.
Yeah. Cyrus was wonderful. That was Jonah Hill's first really interesting performance. I felt
the thing with Jonah Hill with that is you could tell that he could do something a little different, tweak his normal thing. And do something wholly original, unlike Seth Rogen, who really just plays the same character every time, except for like Observer and Report, where he actually played a non-stoner, very complicated, complex character. Whereas Jonah Hill just seems to tweak something.
Sure.
He'll just, you know, like Cyrus, it's very funny, and he's very funny in it, but it's very dark and very serious too. So yeah, I agree. He's really good. And in Moneyball, of course, you know.
Of course,
he's very good.
I could see that Oscar nomination coming his way. I feel like if it wasn't Cyrus, it would come pretty soon.
Eventually.
Yeah, and so, but anyways, with Mark Duplass, he's a very successful filmmaker as well as actor. And so he's in this film called Your Sister's Sister. That's the new Lynn Shelton film, where he's paired with Rosemary DeWitt and Emily Blunt. And you can also see Mark Duplass in a Fox Searchlight film. It'll be Safety Not Guaranteed, which is the Colin Trevorrow film. I believe that was a Sundance selection this year. It had a lot of good buzz. And that's had a very interesting marketing campaign, because it's all you see is just like a snippet of a, you know, newspaper where it says, wanted, you know, someone to go back in time with me. Yeah. You know, I need that.
That was the center of the trailer, too. And the trailer was very interesting, too. And it's got, of course, the adorable Aubrey Plaza.
She's lovely. Yeah, she's great.
And, you know, I'm curious. That's something a little different, too. That could appeal to mainstream, and if they really push that well, that could get some awards buzz going, at least for maybe, obviously we haven't seen it yet, but maybe for writing or something like that.
Sure.
I mean, we could, obviously, if the Independent Spirit Awards will certainly be paying attention too, because they do they will pay attention to a lot of really good stuff that does have that mainstream appeal. You know, they've done stuff with like the Hurt Locker they nominated, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they're keeping, if it can certainly get that ball rolling, and it's in, with it being in June, it certainly can get that playing those small fests with the Chicago International Film Festival. Who knows if it might play there or get something, I don't know, but we will certainly play it out and see.
And you mentioned Seth Rogen. He's in a movie in June called Take This Waltz, which is the new film by Sarah Polley, who's a very exciting young voice. She did a film called Away From Her, which is one of the best films about a relationship between old people and then this woman who's sliding, I think she's sliding into Alzheimer's, and it's a stunning portrait of these people. You can't imagine that it's by a young filmmaker, but she really has a lot of great promise.
It's Seth Rogen and
Michelle Williams
together, yeah. And you think of that odd pairing, and you know, I mean, I know Michelle Williams is dating Jason Segel in real life. But,
yeah, yeah.
You know, that's an odd pairing, but I approve.
I fully approve as well. So, is there anything in like June, July that you're looking at?
Well, June is it's kind of interesting. As soon as the first day. Day in June 1st, Snow White and the Huntsman looks kind of interesting. It certainly looks better than Mirror, Mirror, but mm-hmm. it looks like it could be this somewhat trippy, demented fun. I mean, we're talking, you know, just, I just watched the trailer again yesterday just to kind of get a feel for it, and I'm just watching it and thinking to myself, the visuals, just the atmosphere of it, I don't even know who's directing that. I can't think of who's directing that.
I think it's his first film. I think he's very experienced in visual effects, and you can definitely get you can get that from the trailer. Although my dad had the funniest reaction to it when I showed him the trailer. He said, so let me get this straight. Charlize Theron isn't as fair as Kristen Stewart.
I
guess that's a bit of a stretch, but you know.
One of our fellow CFCA members, Eric Childress, he mentioned that once. He goes, I think he remembers something along the lines of like a tweet or whatever. He said, Kristen Stewart fairer than Charlize Theron? He says, I don't think so. You know, it is one of those things where you go,
it's like, I don't know. I don't know if anyone's fairer than Charlize Theron.
And I think it's interesting with Chris Hemsworth in there. You know, the least favorite Marvel movie of mine is Thor. I think it's well made, but it was boring and he was really disengaging. But he was really good in Avengers. It can be perceived as something is pretty much the same performance. But he seemed to tweak it, and I think that's more, obviously it's more credit to Whedon to sort of taking it and being able to mold that into sort of a little bit more of an internalization than just, you know, prancing around. I think the fact that Downey made that joke of Shakespeare in the Park, I think is a little bit of a jab at Thor, especially being made by Kenneth Branagh. And I like Branagh. His Hamlet, I think, is fantastic.
Oh, absolutely. He's done so much great work.
Yes. And he's really good, too. He's a really good actor. I mean, My Week with Marilyn, he's really good.
Yeah, he's the best part of that for me.
I think him and Michelle Williams, even though the film itself, I think, isn't that great. But I did like him in it. And I do like him. So, yeah. And he's going to be supposedly doing the next Jack Ryan movie, too. So that'll be interesting to see.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, yeah.
But,
well, as far as, I mean, if you want to just a couple titles for June and then just go right into July.
Well, Brave, I think the visuals that we have seen for it, I think just look great. Getting Kelly MacDonald as the lead.
Kelly MacDonald is one of the most adorable voices. I always knew she would do some kind of princess thing at some point. And so this is the first heroine, the first female protagonist, like main protagonist of a Pixar film. So that's why Brave is getting a lot of publicity on that front. But any parent who wants to see other good animated films, the two options I would have as well as that would be Paranorman, which is by the same studio that did Coraline. It's a stop motion film, and it's a kid who can talk to ghosts and then he battles zombies or something. It sounds kind of interesting.
I'm in.
I'm totally down
right
for
there.
It.
If you sold it that way, I think I'd be in.
Yes, and then Marjane Satrapi, who I adore. She did this graphic novel, and then it was turned into an Oscar-nominated animated film called Persepolis. She was about being in Iran and then being exiled and about her family. And it's a very beautiful film. And she has a film called Chicken with Plums that's based on her other graphic novel. It's about some kind of Iranian violinist. And so that sounds pretty interesting. So there's many. There's, you know, big films, small films.
I think the one small film that was I'm kind of curious about is Seeking a Friend at the End of the World with Steve Carell and Keira Knightley.
Yes.
And I think that's kind of interesting that you want to talk about something that's completely different from the usual romantic comedy fare, you know. I think Carell is really, I think, underrated, and sometimes, in a way, in some serious roles, he can be underutilized. I think this obviously we'll have to wait and see, but I'm certainly very curious to see how this pans out because just the whole idea, you start sitting there almost, you want to start laughing hysterically. The world's going to end, and then these two meet and start falling in love, and it's like there's asteroids coming down, and you know, how is this going to play out? But I still think that there's going to be that, as long as there's that human level of connection, I think it will play very well.
Oh, definitely.
And I'm looking forward to that.
I'm looking forward to that. And there's just no shortage of apocalypse movies now. I know Seth Rogen's working on his own at the moment. There's the Grand Jury Prize winner at Sundance this year was Beasts of the Southern Wild, which also has a kind of a post-apocalyptic, kind of almost New Orleans-influenced look at the end of the world, very water-filled and interesting. So that's another one to look for.
Yeah, also in June, Soderbergh, guy with a nice indie background, comes out with Magic Mike.
Yes, Magic Mike, about Channing Tatum's actual past as a male stripper.
Yes, which is interesting.
Yeah,
and the thing that I like about Soderbergh is he'll try something new. He'll experiment. You know, he'll go and film something like The Girlfriend Experience, which I wasn't a big fan of, but he'll hire an actual adult film star to play an escort, and it just... I didn't think it worked that well, but something like Haywire took somebody from the MMA world and Gina Carano and put her into playing a CIA operative who just kicks everybody's butt. And I think that worked. And I think on that level, it was just a simplistic, it was the right role that just seemed to match perfectly. And Soderbergh does like to experiment. He'll go and, you know, do that, and then he'll go make another Oceans movie or another Clooney Damon, whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't matter what it is because it's going to be something.
His next movie should just be called Clooney Damon, I think.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Clooney and Co. How about that? There we go.
Yeah.
You know?
There you go.
But yeah, I think this will be interesting. Tatum, you know, has been, you know, slowly, steadily rising as certainly as a box office draw.
I've never been a fan of his dramatic work. I think there's still kind of a, you know, just kind of a dull quality to his emoting in some of the dramatic films. But he had a huge success with 21 Jump Street. People really took note of that. They really saw he can kid his persona. He can have fun. There's a certain deadpan comedy that he can work well off of with Jonah Hill, you know, who's more, you know, out there. And so I think with Magic Mike, it looks like that could be another opportunity to see him expand on that.
Yeah, be a little self-depreciating, I think.
Deprecating.
Deprecating, thank you. I think, yeah, that's self-deprecation and certainly a good cast, too. I mean, you got McConaughey. I mean, certainly I think the females will be flocking to this movie. But I'm definitely curious just because it is Soderbergh and he can make good movies. And I think that's something that certainly... is in the corner of this movie.
Absolutely. And I think that must have been what attracted him because, again, it's working with someone who may not necessarily, you know, be... Well I mean, he works with non-actors. Channing Tatum is an actor. But he's working with someone who has been a male stripper. So he always loves working on that divide between is this real, is this acted. He likes working with people who have had experience in their field sometimes. So I think that might be, you know, interesting. I think there's so much in June. I think we've filled an entire half hour just talking about June.
I think the one that we can't skip in June, we can't skip Prometheus.
Yeah, Prometheus.
I mean,
yeah.
Everything that I've seen about this is definitely my probably second most anticipated. I mean, if I wanted to, I could probably tie this with Dark Knight Rises. Everything that I have seen about this, I get giddy. You know, I have this genuine joy. And to be honest, I'm going to profess this right now, and I feel like I'm in a confessional anyways. You know, I finally saw Alien in Aliens for the first time last year. So, and
everyone, you know what? I think as a critic, as anyone who loves film, everyone moves at their own speed. You know,
yes.
I mean, you didn't have time in the womb to look at all the, you know, Godard. You know?
I just saw Goodfellas for the first time about 4 years ago, and I've probably seen it about 20 times since just because it is a great movie just to watch it over and over. But the thing that, you know, Aliens, two vastly different movies. You know, Ridley Scott, you know, obviously made a very much a horror movie. A horror movie without a doubt. And then James Cameron took it and sort of blew it up into this big sci-fi action spectacle, very well-made sci-fi action spectacle. I obviously skipped the third and fourth one.
Skip anything else with the Alien name on it.
Even though I am a Fincher fan, and I would just be curious to see Alien 3.
It's a curiosity. It's certainly the best of any of the other sequels, but still it's not,
this cast, and certainly... I think Noomi Rapace, the original girl with the dragon tattoo, I think was a good casting choice to play the female lead, the strong female lead. And I think she could do well in sort of both tipping the hat to Sigourney Weaver's Ripley, but also something that is completely wholly original that Sigourney Weaver might in return say, yeah, you're pretty good.
Yeah, I think that'll be interesting. And she is a stunning actress.
Yes.
I mean, you didn't see any of that in the Sherlock Holmes sequel. I think that was her first big American role. So I think this will be a good showcase. I'm just hoping that it's a good comeback for Ridley Scott because I think he's been kind of floundering a bit.
Yes.
I think Robin Hood was his last, you know, big film. And I mean, that,
Robin
that
Hood
was
and the Holy
a,
Grail. It's
yeah,
pretty much...
it was kind of a dud. But I think this will be interesting. It's, and I think he wants to go back to his roots. And so I think that's, I think it's a clear
and
sign
the rest,
of that.
And that rest of that cast, I mean, Fassbender probably is, Michael Fassbender is probably the perfect choice to play an android. I mean, you just look at him in the trailer and go, that just fits right there. Or, you know, any pictures you see of him, he's just got that perfectly parted blonde hair, and just the way his face is, he's just perfectly structured to play an android. And I'm curious to see how, because I was discussing with this coworker of mine about how, you know, yes, Ridley Scott has said there's alien DNA in it. You know, it's not necessarily a prequel, but I do remember reading that pretty much the last 12 minutes will satisfy the original Alien fans. And I don't know if it's going to be a, my one coworker said, I don't want Sigourney Weaver just showing up, you know, or something like that, because he feels that it's going to be a little bit of a cop-out. You know, it yes, it takes place before, you know, the original events in Alien. Yes, it's the same company, Weyland Industries, that sent that that original ship that Ripley was on. You know, it's interesting to see what Scott is going to do with that.
And I think it's also opening up more chapters to the saga in between Prometheus and Alien. Like, this might not be the final word before
my coworker said, I would love to see this reboot the entire series rather than just, you know, okay, it's a prequel, and then okay, here's, I don't know, one prediction I've battered around is, oh, you know, the everybody dies and all of a sudden Weyland Industries pulls up a computer screen and there's all the original cast of the first one. And then they redo Fassbender's android to make him look like Ian Holm. You know, you know, that's I have that feeling, but I kind of, in a way, I'm starting to think that might be a little bit, it's pandering, a little bit of pandering going on. And I kind of hope that, you know, I would like to see a reboot, you know, see Scott really sit there and go back to his roots. He's obviously doing the Blade Runner, you know, prequel, sequel, whatever the, I don't know what he's decided on what it's going to be. But that I'm obviously excited because Blade Runner is all great sci-fi starts and stops with Blade Runner.
Absolutely.
So I'm certainly, Prometheus is certainly one to keep an eye on.
And one more thing about Michael Fassbender, who has had an extraordinary career in indies as well as mainstream. He really does straddle both worlds. A lot of people were, you know, first, you know, introduced to him on, you know, X-Men First Class, but he's
Glorious Bastards.
Yeah, Inglourious Basterds, but he's had a film called Fish Tank that he did. He did a film called Hunger with Steve McQueen before they re-teamed for Shame. He was wonderful in the Jane Eyre remake last year, in Cronenberg's A Dangerous Method. He's such a chameleon. He's really one of the most fascinating actors out there. And it's interesting that he's playing an android named David in Prometheus, because I'm just thinking of the android David in AI, artificial intelligence. It just seems to be the go-to android name, I guess. You know?
It's something simple. It's plain. It's five letters. It's short. You know, it doesn't take, I think, much computer storage or whatever, but
exactly. Well, you know what, Matt? I have to cut this off here. I would love to have you on for another show about July.
Yeah, that'd be great. I mean,
we could just kind of analyze each month by month.
I mean, there's so much coming out the rest of the summer that you can talk about, both big and small.
Yes, so many great ones, and we're looking forward to all of that. So thank you for being on the show, and thank you for listening. You can check out all of my recent reviews and interviews at HollywoodChicago.com, and all of Matt's reviews and interviews at HollywoodSnitch.com.
Yes.
That concludes today's episode of Indie Outlook. I'm your host, Matt Fagerholm, and I invite you to tune in next time for more coverage of the latest and greatest in modern independent cinema. Till then, I'll be on the lookout.